Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Hello, my name's Olivia Kennedy, but you can call me Liv. Thank you.
Woo-hoo. And
Jeremy Cobb, but Daryl Bailey calls me the Cobb Codex, which is a reference that will make sense if you listen to No Small Roles. It's actually a great reference.
Nice.
And if you're not listening to No Small Roles, go give it a listen. It's a great show.
Why not?
Jasper and I have both been on
please
it.
Describe.
I think that's a really that cool have, name, actually. I really like that. So, yeah.
No Small Roles is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. Yeah. They're lovely people as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's great. Nice.
Grace was even in Slow Down Showdown from that show.
Hey, there we go. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Well, we are here to discuss a video game that apparently a couple people have played. I don't know if you've seen it. A few people played
this. It's a pretty small, obscure release. It's a deep cut.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Stick your teeth into me!
Feet Jeremy Paul.
Stick your teeth into me!
I'm genuinely confused as to what was happening. I was like, is Liv having an asthma attack? Is that, like, do we get an inhaler? I've got an inhaler.
I can probably provide it in a normal amount of light.
Just a normal amount.
Yeah.
Totally normal amount.
Liv, why are you sweating? Why are you sweating so hard?
Don't worry about that. That's just my natural state.
Liv, the room is filling up with sweat.
Oh, don't look at the room.
Is that Biscuit swimming past you?
No, wow, Biscuit, okay. Get out of here.
Liv, are those the characters from this game on posters? Why are they all nude?
Don't
Why do you
look
have nude posters of all the NPCs?
No.
Also, how watertight is this room that you created?
Yeah.
Impressive.
Is that
no
my
leakage.
PC?
That, what?
Why do you have a nude photo of Dennis Coldspring on your wall?
Don't look at my nude photo.
I turned off nudity in my game.
You turned off nudity? Oh my god.
Because I'm streaming it. I didn't want to upset Twitch.
Yeah, fair.
Oh, I have a story. Fair. Actually, no, I won't tell the story because I was thinking, if this is just a little side plug, I want to do a little Patreon exclusive where I talk about the sexy scenes involved in this game.
Yes.
So there.
That if there's ever a reason to head over to Patreon, that is the reason. So
that's it.
Liv, little solo part about sexiness in Baldur's Gate 3?
Yeah.
Yeah,
title Baldur's Gay.
Baldur's Gay! Baldur's Gay threesome.
Baldur's Gay Baldur's threesome. Gay. I'm perfect.
I'm gay. Yes. I'm Baldur. Sorry, I said I'm gay, but yeah, it still sounds.
I'm gay.
Baldur.
But no, we are here to talk about Baldur's Gate 3. We're going to talk a little bit about our reactions to the game. We've all been playing it, and some of us have been streaming it, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some of the reaction. Obviously, we're going to talk about some of the things that people have pointed out in reference to the game, and generally discuss all of that whilst hopefully having a fun old time over this relatively expansive game that truly it blew my mind when they when Larian posted the stat about an opening weekend. It was played for a collective 1,225 years.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's like,
that's wild, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And most of the people spent
most of that. Like, I want to know what percentage of years was spent swapping underwear at your camp.
Yeah, putting different outfits on. Sorry,
like, I genuinely not just well, probably, your camp like, swapping underwear.
Swapping underwear. Well, I mean, to be fair, they did say that the average person spent over it like an hour and a bit on character creation. And I was we all know the bit that took 20 minutes. You know
it's
what I mean?
It's a very important decision. I don't know what.
It wasn't rolling stats, put it that way.
But yeah, I will say as well, I started off with very like positive vibes going into this. I will say, even though I love the game, I'm not afraid to look at it critically. So like that's something that we're going to be doing during this episode. But it's still going to be fun.
And I think... So. But I think this is something that is kind of important and something that we, you know, I think is there's even larger topics in here, which is like, how do you interact with media when there is problematic elements? Because there is very likely going to be a situation over the next, you know, however long, in which most media you interact with is going to have, like, some people are going to have issue. There's going to be some, like, problems with it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do you kind of... talk about these things, how you handle these things. I was literally having a discussion the other day with someone about the fact that like so many people within the UK, especially people my age, like 50% of their personality for a long time was Harry Potter. Yep. And it's like, that genuinely feels like there's been a, like there's like a gaping hole cut out of some people who are just like, I guess I gotta hide all this Harry Potter stuff in my house. Like, you know what I mean? It's like such a weird conundrum. Yeah. So I think that's kind of, we can dig into that a little bit here, but I definitely think that's part of a broader discussion of just like generally interacting with, you know, media where there's going to be these issues, because I think that it's kind of hard to have any kind of like like spectacularly big budget thing that does it, that is just like perfectly sensitive and is everything is swimmingly great and lovely. You know what I mean?
There's going to be people mad about every single thing though.
That's,
like, that's what I mean. But... people are going to get mad. People are going to get mad, especially like until Twitter blows up finally.
Yeah.
People are going to get mad. Like, I mean, we just need to...
With Harry Potter as well, just to say, because like it's, I think a big part of it for me, because I was a Harry Potter kid, like big time. Like I my life shifted completely when I went on to Pottermore and it told me I was a Ravenclaw instead of a Gryffindor. That's the level of hype.
Wow. That's a big change.
Yeah,
to be fair.
For real.
Change.
I was like, who am I, you know? But literally seeing, this is a different topic altogether, but like my trans brothers and sisters and trans siblings said, hey, this hurts us. And I was like, okay, no then. So like, yeah. So I think because it's like giving money directly to someone who is being awful, I think there are like, different levels, you know? And it's very interesting discussion. Maybe we should talk about that.
I think it's, worth a larger conversation.
For me, the Harry Potter thing, there's certainly like in my youth, you absolutely can look at a point where like you separated into pre-Harry Potter and post-Harry Potter, because it was a pretty seismic thing.
Cultural, like,
but in all of children's literature, it's pre-Harry Potter and post-Harry Potter. It transformed the landscape.
Yeah.
New York Times bestseller lists were created because of those books.
Yeah, children's created, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but I felt like I'd kind of outgrown it, honestly, by the time I was an adult. Like, I was obsessed and super into it. But once the book series was over, I had always kind of thought the movies weren't as good.
But I think just to jump in, personally, I think a lot of that stems from like growing up as a fantasy like nerd, because I think that anyone who's like into fantasy will quickly see how flawed a concept Harry Potter is a lot of the problems and things that just don't really stack up. I'm talking about for like the casual people who like the main fantasy thing they've interacted with in their whole life has been Harry Potter, and like absolutely still want to go to like Harry Potter World and you know, buy Harry Potter mugs and like show their kids the Harry Potter films stuff like
guess.
That like,
I mean, I just never thought the movies past the first movie, I just never thought they were that good. I hated the third one.
That's completely fair, but I'm just saying I think that for a lot of people anyway,
we need to have
that,
a whole
that's a very valid
on
topic that we can okay. absolutely do a whole
tell us if you want to hear
what I was saying.
But all right, what was it, Jerry?
I basically was trying to say that for my perspective on it was different because I had kind of moved past it at that point, in part because I'd read other fantasy stuff that I thought was better, but it's not like I thought Harry Potter was bad. I was just like, okay, I'm going to do other stuff now. Like, I was like, oh, look, movies that are good movies. and started watching those. Like, it wasn't even just fantasy. It was just like, yeah, these were really good. I enjoyed them. Now that I'm older and I've seen people point out some of the flaws, I'm like, oh yeah, there were problems with that. All right. Yeah. But like when J.K. Rowling tried to be a transphobe, my experience of it was more like, well, I already wasn't really giving money to this. So I guess I just won't go on the Harry Potter tour in London. And if they come out with more stuff, I just won't go see the Fantastic Beasts. Oh, no, I won't go see that trash series
it's
already.
So bad. It's so bad.
Yeah, for me, I can't fully relate in that particular way. But I do acknowledge that, like, and this is as somebody for whom it was a massively formative thing. That I had to defend from, I had to spend my youth defending it from other Christians who were like, but it's evil. And I'd be like, but you don't understand. And now, ironically,
little Jeremy's so cute.
Ironically, those Christians are now like, yeah, J.K. Rowling. Like,
boy. Yeah, for sure. I bet they love her.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's fun. Sorry, I meant horrible. No.
But yes, Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, wow.
Baldur's Gate.
Yes.
I'll jump in a little bit here because I was very fortunate enough to go to the like a kind of a pre-launch event.
Very happy for you, Jasper.
In Ghent.
My God, Larian, please next time. I would love a
next time. Let us know. I was very, very fortunate to get to spend a couple of days out in Ghent and spend some time with some wonderful kind of other like TTRPG creators out there, which was just a real fun time. We did like a little tour. We got to get some hands-on hours with the game, and truly it was so funny the difference in the experience from the creators, like the content creators, to the journalists. The journalists were like bullet sweating, like absolutely speed running as much of the game as they humanly could, making furious notes, like like they were running all over again. They had their laptops. I saw them in coffee shops just furiously typing away, trying to write up as much as they could from memory about all the things, you know what I mean? And then all of us content creators are just like swanning around, going on boat tours, taking little videos. It just couldn't, and like I just spent the whole time just being like, look at me, I'm a silly little content creator. Ooh, I made a halfling. How much fun. And I could just see them looking over at me like, absolutely.
That bitch.
Get fucked, dude. Yeah. I could get fucked. It was so funny. So that was enjoyable, but also got to talk to some of the dev team. I'm still kind of working on trying to get one or two of them to come on the show, just because I think it would be interesting to hear their thoughts on, like, you know, the response to the game, how popular it's been, so maybe some of the criticisms as well. I'm still working away on that, but had a really, really cool time doing that, and it was a very fun event, and getting to see the kind of getting kind of hands-on to see the scope of this game for the first time was just like slightly bananas, honestly. I just picking it up and in those 3 hours, and I suddenly was like, oh I did not have a clue what this game was until right, like, do you know what I mean? Like I thought I knew, but like I feel like until you play it, I don't know if you guys can testify to this, but like until you actually play it, you're like, oh no, this is huge, this is really and this is really big. This is really, really big.
I mean, I knew that. Like,
that's my first impressions. But yeah, go.
I know that. Like, so it'd been out for like 2 years, I think, maybe
on early release,
early access. Yeah, and I've had since then. Like since it came out on early access, and I've been through the ups, the downs, this and that, and the other. I've played it through. I like the game a lot, gang. I played it through at least 10 times with different characters.
Was the whole game available back then? Like you could
no, up until like the it was like the first act, basically.
Oh, okay.
And so every time I got to that point, I would just be like, when is the rest of it coming out? But I knew I knew a lot of people who were like, oh no, I'm just gonna wait until the full release to get it, which is this, you know, a sane thing to do rather than just torture yourself. I've been chomping at the bit for years, basically. So this is big time for Liv.
Big time for Liv.
For Jeremy? Me, I wasn't even gonna buy this game because I watched clips, including some of yours, Liv, way back in the day, and I was like, oh, it's racist. Yeah, I'm good. Like, that was literally, I watched a bunch of clips, and, like, in the comments, people were like, man, I really like how brutal the drow are in this game. Like, they're so bad, even the goblins are scared of them. And I was like, yeah, this doesn't really seem like my thing. That's not really how I play the game. I'm good. It just wasn't going to do it, because I was like, all right, fine. It sounds good. Have fun, everybody. But then it came out, and everybody was like, yo, this game's incredible. And I was like, oh, is it actually good? Like, is there other stuff to appreciate about it? And so, and I never played a Baldur's Gate game before. The closest I'd come was Knights of the Old Republic, which steals a lot of the, well, I guess uses, not really steals, but just blatantly uses Baldur's Gate, maybe two? Baldur's Gate 1 or 2 mechanics. I think I said on the show before, that was the first time I ever heard the phrase saving throw and had no idea what they were talking about. So I was like, all right, let's give it a shot. Let's play it. And I was like, oh, this is actually pretty great. I'm really enjoying this. It is also still racist.
It is. That's what we're going to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. But as a game, as a game, I'm enjoying it. I think it's pretty impressive that the degree to which they managed to reproduce a version of the D&D 5e experience in a video game. It feels like taking part in some kind of D&D campaign, except it's what you would have all, what, at least what I would have always wanted, which is to get to see really cool versions of the characters doing the cool things.
Yeah. Doing certain things,
It does like the tabletop elements in terms of like gridding out combats and figuring out distances. It's much more exacting than almost any table can be with that stuff. Yeah.
It's rough. Being a rogue, trying to hide and getting it wrong is just like, no.
Yes.
Just looking at me, huh? Okay, got
and
this.
I think that,
so brutal.
That aspect of the game, I think, is really interesting in how much more strict it is and how much, how basically unwilling it is to sort of, like, let people get away with stuff. Like, can I
hide
here?
There's no rule of cool, right? There's no rule of cool.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like, the you know, that doesn't really exist.
Exactly.
I'm wondering whether we should just dive straight in at the top here. You know, we can talk about some of the criticisms of the game, because then I think we can save the kind of things that we enjoyed about the game until the end.
Yeah, nice little round off.
Just so we can end it on a lighter note, because I think it is kind of also feels slightly weird to be like, oh, we've mentioned the stuff, the fact that it's racist, now we're going to talk about why we love it, and then we're going to talk about the other stuff. So just to dive in, I think that ultimately, you know, maybe as a starting point here, a lot of the issues within this game can't be removed from, or part of the issue, like, yeah, it can't, you can't separate it from the fact that it's based on the Forgotten Realms and it is based on this original kind of very classic D&D style adventure. And I think probably also shows that there's been some, I think what feels so jarring about it, right, is the fact that it's, there has been, and, you know, as we've said multiple times, much slower than we'd like it to be, but there has been a kind of a swing, you know, in terms of making D&D feel like more of a rounded game, you know, and taking out some of the problematic elements. So to then kind of have them kind of steered back in such a kind of brutal, actual on-screen way in the form of dialogue and lines. You know, I think the drow example, I remember that being one of the very first topics we ever discussed back in 2020 when we started this show, you know, about the kind of drow people, how they're portrayed. You know, I think to have that so blatantly then on screen, and I'm kind of interested to get your take on this, because there's been a, I think one interesting element of this is the fact that this game went in development 6 years ago, right? And the kind of where we are now versus where we were 6 years ago, very different places, even just within the media world and the kind of conversations that we have around a lot of these things has moved on drastically. You know what I mean? Like, back in 2020, we were one of the few people that were having these conversations, and I feel like they're happening, they just they happen, like, you know, very, very openly now. The fact that, you know, as we'll reference some of the, like, threads and things that happened on Twitter, no, I'm not calling it X,
no,
stupid.
Never, ever.
You know, the some of the threads we're talking about, like, the fact that they go viral now and get this much discourse around them, I think is a testament to the fact that we are having these conversations, you know, much more publicly, much more openly than we did back in 2017, 2018, 2019, you know, even 2020.
So in that respect,
so like, what's
it's
your
nice
reaction?
To see a little bit, but like, still not.
But it's illustrating the point, right? That is like, for what I'm saying is that for me, it feels like it's illustrating the point that, like, how, like, that we have moved on, even if it's not Wizards that have moved on. I'm talking about even just as a TTRPG community, we've moved on. That it feels so glaring to be like, oh,
I would
to
say
this stuff back in.
I would say elements have moved on. Mm. I don't think the community the as a whole community. Has
oh
moved
no
on.
There's a whole section oh, no, of the community no, absolutely that does not care. We can guarantee that.
Sure. Yeah. And I don't know if the I'd have to speak to the developers, but I'm going to go ahead and say this game was made in Belgium. I don't think they would have cared that much even if they started in 2020. I really don't think that. This is the King Leopold II Belgium that we're talking about here. This is the King Leopold II and the people. I looked it up afterwards because I didn't realize who made this game. I was like, Larian, okay, I don't know who that is. All right, I've never played any of their games. Cool. Good for them. And then people are like, well, you know, the developers did this. And Jasper, I was talking to you and you had mentioned that the developers had said, had indicated that there were maybe things that they would have changed. You didn't really go into specifics, but you'd said that at that at the meeting that they were like, oh, yeah, maybe we would have done things differently. Had we started making the game now, but those things were a problem then. It's not like they. It's not like it started being racist in 2020. It was a problem when created.
No. Yes.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
This absolutely. The ultimate issue is ignorance, and to an extent, I don't think unless people had complained about it that they would have even said much. I'm guessing. I'm guessing unless they saw people saying, "Hey, it's kind of messed up." Then they like here's an example. I'm gonna take a position. It is not, in my opinion, a problem to include fantasy racism in a game inherently. The problem comes when you just include it just so you basically have people to hate, and so you can be like, oh yeah, they're bad. They don't do it in any, like, you can have that as an interesting plot point that there's a group of people who are discriminated against for various reasons. But within that, there needs to be at least the possibility of a storyline that says, oh, we're fighting against that, though. It's like, oh, okay, so tieflings are hated because somewhere in their ancestry, there's some sort of devil Infernal involved. Lexi. Or, as some people have made the argument, in recent Forgotten Realms lore, a group of tieflings had dragged part of Faerun into Avernus. So a group of terrorists pulled off a move that killed a bunch of citizens, and now all of the people of that group are looked at harshly. Is there any real life parallel that we can look at here that might be able to give us an idea of how we could approach this storyline? Maybe we introduce, doesn't have to be something you engage with, but maybe the existence of a tiefling rights movement. Literally anything that's like, why are tieflings not like, hey guys, we don't like being treated this way. Let's get together and do something about it. We have all these other guilds. Why can't we have like an anti-racism guild? Why is it that-
genuine question, Jeremy. Just double check. I don't know if this is just me. Is anyone not like looking at the people who persecute the tieflings in like a harsh light? Because I went into it, I was like, oh, we're supposed to hate the people who are persecuting the tieflings, right? Like,
but some of those are your allies. Some of those, like some of the people who are openly saying slurs against them, are people that you can ally yourself with. Your allies are racist against each other.
Yeah. No, that is true. That is true. The whole
and like, it's not like the game criticizes slaughtering all the goblins necessarily. The goblins are still pretty much treated as like, nah, they're all bad.
They're
all just bad and dumb.
Yeah, that sucks. That does suck. I know.
And it ain't just, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's it's the draft. Like, there's the possibility to be one of the good ones, but that's not it. That's not really.
Especially later on in the game. I'm not going to give any spoilers, but like, basically, there is a group that is fully hated the whole time. Definitely, like, supposed to be, you know, just never, no redemption. And then it's like, oh, but this one's okay, though. Like, okay.
Yeah, and that doesn't make it any better to me. To me, what would make it interesting is if you're going to use that, introduce at least the possibility of a storyline that directly addresses it and says, hey, the people who exist, like, maybe not all goblins are like that. Like, maybe there's a section of goblins who are reformists. Maybe there's a group of anarchist goblins who are trying to bring down the established order and are like, we don't like the way that things are run. We don't like what Maglubiot is trying to get us to do. Like, we're breaking with that. To me, that just makes the story more interesting. If you are just like sort of eyes closed, introducing all of that and just be like, yeah, it's just, they're just racist. That's just how it is. That's, I would call that racist. I would just call that a racist thing.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think that it's like, but I think for me, when I look at this and I look at the conversations around this, it feels like exactly the same conversations that we were having about D&D in 2020, where we were saying all of this stuff about people being a monolith and, you know, treating people in a way that is, you know, like dehumanizing, or, you know, like all of those tropes, I feel like are housed like get housed within this game. And I think what is interesting, or what kind of feels, I don't know, like what like doesn't sit right with me is like, I think like you said, Jeremy, is like, I can see the idea that you have a blind spot and that you don't, in the same way that we felt like back in 2020, there was a lot of games that were built out that people have blind spots, etc. But it then feels like, well, okay, you probably had then in the last 2-3 years, these conversations would have been extremely prevalent within the community. So to then not, like I said, it's not about necessarily cutting any of that stuff or taking it out of the game. But like you said, Jeremy, like have there be a presence of the counterpoint within the game, or at least like an acknowledgement of within the game that makes it feel more purposeful, as opposed to just sort of thrown in there by, you know, like you said, as like arrogant, like ignorantly, you know what I mean? Like show that there's an awareness. I think that it actually kind of stems back to something that we were sort of slightly talking about before the episode, which is that it does just still feel like we're back in this place post 2020 where it's really difficult to have conversations with certain groups of people when you're bringing up issues of race, because they just goes into like immediate like defensive stance. And so it almost feels a bit like for Larry, and what it was like, they could put in that kind of counterbalance stuff, but then for them, I think in their heads, they're like, oh, but then we're opening up the conversation. And then that's drawing attention to the racism stuff that we didn't necessarily think we were putting in there at the time. And so I can already imagine how they span themselves in circles thinking about it, and then just ultimately doing the worst thing, which was nothing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But they did know they were putting it in there. They used the same text in the description of the tieflings, even. It says, like, oh, yeah, everybody hates them. It doesn't literally say that, but it's like suspicion.
But what I'm saying is the point that we made back in 2020 is it's like this was just like the accepted norm of fantasy.
Yeah.
Until we started having these conversations more broadly and pointing out to people, that's when things started to change. Things didn't change before the community started really taking a look at them. And being like, this isn't acceptable.
That's why, do you know what I mean? Regularly, the people who have played D&D for years and years will just be like, oh, why are you changing it now? Because it's had a broader look from a bunch of people have been like, actually, this is bad. But another point I'll make,
more people coming into the space.
Another point that I'll make, which is a shame, is because there are things that like Larian has done that are really fucking great. Like, for example, there's no homophobia to be seen in this world, and that's fantastic and makes me feel so great. And like, there's so much representation. The most
fabulous,
great. Yeah,
I saw the most fabulous thing the other day, which was it was like a thread about this dude who was complaining about the fact that there's no option to turn off men hitting on him just like unwarranted in the street. And I was like, yo, that's good. Bruh. That's really funny. Like, he was like, it's like, it makes me feel so uncomfortable.
Oh, does it?
The fact that like, I'll just be walking down the street and like, I'll get catcalled. But like, literally said, I was like, what?
Like,
the fact that you can't see this is crazy
like,
for me.
Did you feel like dehumanized and like an object? And did you, wow.
Like an object?
Wow. Okay, so strange for you. But yeah. Yeah, no, it's
he
like,
was like, I think he even said, I even tried making an ugly character so it wouldn't happen. I was just like, hear yourself. Like, please have some self-awareness. Like, please.
Trust my guy.
Like, you are the problem, my guy.
So wild. But yeah, in terms of like the they've done so well in terms of like just like making it like normalized as well within the game that like there are people who are gay. There, you know, there are people who are not straight, and also just having every NPC be like romanceable regardless of what gender you pick is fantastic.
Can't so you also just, be non-binary explicitly? You like you would be, literally just choose your character and still have whatever body you want.
Exactly. Yeah, and you can customize things completely. You can have whatever set of genitalia you want with whatever like, you know, voice you have, with
physique,
whatever physique
and,
you have.
And it's
perfect. And it's like, it's such a shame that they do so well in one front but then completely neglected another, you know. So
I think that's what feels kind of interesting to me is the fact that it does seem to handle like that side of the game like, you know, better. Like, it then makes me, that's why I kind of feel like honestly what I feel like it is, and I kind of get so bored of saying this because it, like, I don't want it to make it sound like an excuse, because I feel like I've said it so many times that I think it's almost worse at this point, is it just kind of feels like a little bit lazy, right? It's like, oh, we just took the D&D text and we just copied and pasted it in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Without like really doing any investigation. Because I can't help but feel like the people who were like making the conscious choice to allow you to be non-binary in this game were also just happy looking at the tiefling descriptor and being like, cool,
especially
I'm happy with that.
As they were trying to distance themselves from D&D as well. Like Larian have been like, oh, we are not, like, you know, it's like the same system, but we're not under Wizards of the Coast. And it's like, you can't have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, I do think that is an interesting, you know, because like as Jeremy alluded to when we were at the event, there was sort of, there wasn't any kind of, and I don't want to like run the risk of misquoting anyone. It was just more of an impression that I got. But like, there was multiple references to the fact that, you know, this game was started 6 years ago. Mm. It was like a self-funded, effectively like game that wasn't attached to any sort of big studio. And they actually kind of, sort of paid for the rights to like make this based on D&D. Mm. And I think that, but they did kind of make reference to the idea. They were like, what we feel like we've done with the game is kind of prove the concept, and that hopefully now it will allow us to expand out into, and they literally, I could be misquoting, but the way I interpreted it was like, they were like more interesting, you know, areas culturally, and you know, like they were saying things like that, kind of, which for me very much felt like they were drawing, you know, they were very aware of the fact that this just looks like, you know, this just looks like medieval Europe and extensively, and a lot of the, there has been elements added which try to kind of sear into other places. It's just that I just don't think they did enough, like anywhere close to enough. And like, yeah, I just, again, honestly, it just feels like a shame because like this game is brilliant. And like, I would just love to be somewhere other than Europe for a bit. You know what I mean? Sure. Like it would be fantastic.
The thought has also hit me as well. Like, obviously I am not condoning like there being an element of racism and slavery at all. I wonder how people who have never experienced the emotions you experience when being kind of like othered, like feel. Obviously it's through the medium of a video game, so it's not the same. But if you're playing a tiefling as like a white person, a white cis person who has never experienced that, I wonder if it like strikes you at all, just like, huh, that sucks. I hope it does. I hope it's like you get an element, like a teeny weeny, you know, element of like,
I feel like most white dudes probably just get a hero complex out of it.
That's true.
Like, yeah, the whole world's against me. Yeah, and I'm going to be so right. All edgelordy and just kill everyone or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happened with what's his face? What's his name? The most famous D&D character ever, whose name I can't even remember.
Oh, yeah.
Drizzt.
Drizzt?
He's the one good guy. Like, he's the one good drow. Who then's like, fine, I'm going to cast off my people and be my solo drow self who tries to save.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
I meant to say as well with the drow issue, something that so later on in the game, once again, no spoilers, you can go to a brothel and the people who are there might be some, well, I mentioned drow. There are some drow characters that you can, you know, you can pay.
If you want to get a full breakdown of this, make sure you head to patreon.com.
You could go to a brothel and pay to sleep with some of the employees there, and some of them are drow.
Exactly, yes. But like fetishization of drow, which is just like, it's like, when you think about it that way, interesting. And then you go to their room and it's like, oh yeah, the flavors of the Underdark. And it's like, oh, okay, cool.
The flavors?
Yeah, when you start saying flavors, like, I'm like,
I might be misquoting, take that with a pinch of salt, but I was like, oh, okay. Like, imagine if I was a sex worker and then like, and I took you to my room and it was like full of like Caribbean stuff, just like, oh, welcome to the Caribbean.
I was literally gonna say, you know, it's like, literally like, if like that's like me running a brothel and they like tastes of Zimbabwe.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Would you like to drink from the coconuts? Like,
I was just
drink
saying, like,
from these coconuts.
Exactly. That's horrific.
It's wild. I was just saying with my character, just looking at Shadowheart, like, maybe we shouldn't do this. But then, like, yeah. But then we did.
That's,
Patreon.
I just want to say, I don't think that Belgium, to clarify, I don't think that Belgium is like the worst place on earth. I don't think they're even the most racist place on earth. Essentially, what I'm saying is, if you're not familiar with what King Leopold II did in the Congo, look it up. Because that man, if colonialism was a competition to be the most brutal, he won. I don't think he's been surpassed. And my understanding from the research that I've done is that most Belgian people are not taught in detail, in any real sort of detail about what he was doing in the Congo. And I'd have to look up the demographics, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, based on my experiences traveling to a number of different nations in Europe, I'm going to go ahead and guess Belgium, probably not the most racially diverse place on earth. It's probably almost overwhelmingly one color. And I think that thus there's probably a lot of just like, oh, it didn't even occur to me. Or, oh, that's a problem from over there. That's like an American issue. Oh, they have their, it's never a, so that's part of why I'm like, the last time Belgium went to Africa, it wasn't good. I'm glad they stayed in Europe. Like, I think it's good that they stayed in Europe for this game, because the last time we did it, it did not. If you've ever read the book Heart of Darkness, it was inspired by King Leopold II's activities in Congo. That's what that was inspired by. It was not just like, it wasn't even the British. So I'm like, I look at it as like, I don't expect them to really be that much better. But at the same time, I'm like, I feel fine saying, yeah, this is bad and they could have done it better. Like, I do agree that you could just not include those elements at all and probably would be better for most people. But at the very least, if you're going to include them, do it in a way that's actually interesting and do it in a way that there's a story to it and people can like engage with it. Like, say you're playing a character who is discriminated against. Maybe there are a lot of dialogue trees for people being like, hey, wow, I've never really been friends with somebody like you before, but I see now that I'm hanging out with you, people are saying some wild stuff. And you know what? Even I said some stuff earlier. I'm sorry. Like, I'm really sick.
That's literally exactly what I was thinking, because I was like, I feel like that would have been the more interesting choice from Larian if they'd have acknowledged the elements within the game, like within the source material that they were working with, that they were already 4 years into development and therefore wasn't exactly like, they couldn't back out now and be like, oh, we're going to call it P&P, or like, you know what I mean? Just like it's based on something entirely different. You know, the more interesting thing would have been like to actually address it and be like, you know, have, like you said, like have characters discuss things in a different way, or
and
or like
give the,
have
the
ability
the
for you to have the ability for you to turn around to you know, someone and say, hey, that like that completely out of order, and if they have a problem with it, cool, we can fight about this. Like, I'm happy to fight some racists, you know what I mean? I'm down to do that in a game. I think that you would also, even with that example, run into the same issues of like, I want to play a video game and this isn't the stuff that I want to engage with when I play a video game. I think that that is also just kind of part and parcel with making media, like making anything. You know, we've had discussions when creating stuff like that, like, you know, we've literally had discussions when discussing our actual play, being like, there's a certain point where we can't, like,
content warning,
content warnings or whatever. Like, there is a point where it's like, well, we want to make the art because we feel like we have something to say, or there's some point to it. I think that ultimately is the issue, is it just maybe doesn't feel like there's a point to any of this. It feels like it was in there and it's like, oh, cool. You know, drow are kind of known as bad, but you can be a good one. You know, tieflings are known as bad, but you can be a good one. All of that stuff is just some baked in D&D bullshit that just hasn't been, you know, they didn't analyze it, they didn't interrogate it, they didn't investigate it any further. And then that has led to this situation now. And it probably was like some relatively minor tweaks, which is why it kind of feels lazy. Do you know what I mean? And it makes me kind of get it. That's what makes me the most annoyed about the whole situation, because it really feels like the bar was like, the bar for what our expectations were would have been extremely low. And like a couple of like, you can stick it to the racists dialogue options would have been fantastic. You know what I mean?
Because like, I found that like a lot of the time I was just kind of like, okay, cool, so I'm just gonna kill these people, right? Like, you know, and there wasn't even a question to me. I don't know, like just very odd. And I think a lot of people give the example of like the Druid Grove, right? Number one, as well, if you're going to like try and make me not kill a character, maybe don't have them, spoiler, like threaten to kill a child as well. And yeah. also because the child mm-hmm. happens to be of the race that you do not like. Yeah, like wild stuff. But like, I yeah. think like in one yeah. in some of my early playthroughs as well, because I played this game for a long time, I just murdered them all because I was like, yeah, okay.
You know? And I think this is really interesting, right? Because I think that there is, you know, this is something where I think D&D or no, sorry, TTRPGs are better in this instance, right? Mm. Because you have the flexibility to kind of yeah. like read the room, to get a beat on like where people are prepared to go, how deep you want to go into something, all of those things, which the actually, Jerry, one of the articles that you sent over was, you know, basically like how the game itself is almost like limited by the fact that you don't have a DM, you mm-hmm. don't have mm-hmm. this kind of endless amount of imagination that you can draw from to then get you, you know, that extra, like, yeah, to kind of like give you that extra option, that one extra option that you don't have that actually probably makes the more compelling story, or at least the more, you know, interesting story for you as an individual, which is kind of the point of TTRPGs. Mm-hmm. So I definitely agree there that I think it is held back in the sense that, like, you know, that's where I kind of feel like maybe like the call is to not include it, because mm-hmm. you're never going to have, I think if you include racism in a game, where you have all these choice options, you're never, ever, ever going to make a game that satisfies everyone in that respect.
No.
Like, you're never going to, you could literally give a million different, like, mm-hmm. Like choice trees from like one racist encounter, and I guarantee you that like it would be upsetting or uncomfortable for people. Like, do you know what I mean? I don't think there's a way that you get around that in a game where you don't specifically tell a very specific story. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, I think in a linear game, you can do that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you can do that with a game that gives you this kind of choice trees. Because you're basically saying to the player, you have choice, you have the ability to negotiate the situation how you want to, but not quite how you want to, or not quite in the way that would make it satisfying for you or kind of rewarding for you to have maybe, like, you know, dealing with something that is difficult for you as an individual. Mm-hmm.
I've been banging the drum for it for years now. Disco Elysium has racism in it, but I say it does a better job of dealing with it, because you can choose to be in that game. You can choose to be racist, or you can choose to be anti-racist. And if you choose to be racist, your companion characters are like, hey, you're an idiot. And the game itself repeatedly tells you, hey, you're an idiot. Like, there's a character in that game just named the racist lorry driver. You never even find his name. He's just a racist.
Yeah.
And it's like amazing, open. Yeah. Like, there's multiple instances of like seeing racism from different people and engaging with it in different ways. And if you do choose to engage with it in certain ways, characters who the game very clearly intends for you to like will be like, dude, what is wrong with you? And we'll like, and you'll have, they will have conversations and it will affect your gameplay experience in various ways. And then you could also just choose to be like, no, I disagree with you and make fun of those people. Again, it's not like a major, major plot point in that game to the same extent, because race is not like central to the narrative in the way that it is much more central to the journey of some of the characters in Baldur's Gate 3. Like, I don't even know. I feel like the option of killing all of the druids is a very interesting one. I don't know if I would, like, that's not the way that I wanted to go, because I didn't even get the impression that all of them were even racist per se. Like, some of them are just we don't agree. We don't agree with that person.
It's a tough one, because like I think I was incensed immediately, because I was like, well, obviously I'm on the side of the tieflings, like, no question. Because and then I was confused, because I was like, aren't druids supposed, like, usually druids are kind and loving and welcoming, and I was like, what's going on here? And you can blame, once again, spoilers, the head of, well, the stand-in head of the Druid Grove, who is kind of like poisoning things a little bit. But like, if you attack her, if you, you know, pick a fight with her, then all of the other druids are going to back her up. So it's like, what am I going
to
do?
That's the problem. Like, you should be able to talk to the ones who dissent. And there should be options where they're like, look, okay,
maybe we should.
Because there are people who are like openly saying, I'm really not comfortable with this to you. Yeah. But they're not,
and they're like,
like,
oh, maybe bring back Halsin. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I'll do it. Cool. But like, It's just off. It's just true.
Yeah, there does not seem to be an option where, like, you don't just reinstall a new leadership from, you don't go and get the other, because even going to get Halsin is like, you have to go fight a bunch of goblins. And again, the way the goblins are depicted is absolutely boilerplate fantasy. Oh, they're just a bunch of little monsters.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a really, this is the interesting, we're kind of hitting on, like, one of the interesting things here, and I think the comparison to Disco Elysium is the right one to make, because what we have here effectively, and I think we'll sort of maybe start to kind of wrap this part of the conversation up, and I'll give you guys obviously a chance to, you know, if there's anything else you want to say, but I think that for me, what this boils down to is that the perfect example you gave there, Jeremy, of Disco Elysium, which is that this game very, very distinctly and definitely chose to give a stance on racism within the game and how they were going to tackle racism within the game. And this is where I feel like Larian has ultimately made its biggest mistake, is that I don't think they had a company-wide stance on racism within the game. You know what I mean? They did not have a directive, because I do think that it, you know, quite often can happen. You'll see it within games all the time where you'll come up on this like one mission that just feels hella tone deaf and really weird and not like the rest of the game. And you're like, what is this? And usually it's just because these games are so disparate. They're so huge. They're over so, like, there's so many different people working on them. I mean, you have all of the cinematic stuff. And this, by the way, I just want to clarify, I'm not making any excuses here. I'm merely making the point that it can happen that you have the odd, you know, mission or thing that maybe doesn't feel quite as connected in the same way the others do, because things can fall through. But what those games do have is a very clear directive that one, you know, team has then missed. And I think that's quite clear to me. There was a very firm directive on things like homophobia, on, you know, gender identity, all of those things, which is absolutely incredible. But there was not the same directive when it came to dealing with race within a fantasy game. And my instinct is that that wasn't a prevalent conversation happening when this game was sort of conceived. I think that there was that conversation, and there had been that conversation happening for a long time around homophobia and the way that we talk about, the gender conversation. Well, even, but that feels actually where it slightly spreads. I think the gender conversation feels like an even newer discussion, and yet we've gotten we've done much better in that respect. That's my ultimate issue with the game, is it feels like there was no clear directive from the top of being like, this is the way we're going to handle it. It's not that we can't have it, but if we have it, there's a very clear reason as to why it's in there, and we've got to make sure that all the options are locked in. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean that we have to go for all the nice options where you get to be a good person and this. That doesn't have to be the case, but it's like, we as the game have to have an opinion. You know what I mean? We have to make it very clear that we have an opinion on racism, and it is, you know, this. So if the character or the other characters choose to make decisions that, you know, that come, like, that portray in that way, we very clearly say, we don't like this. You know, this person sucks, whatever. You know what I mean? There's consequences or whatever. Like you said, within Disco Elysium, because I think that's what it feels like it's really missing for me. And like I said, I think just quite upsettingly, it just feels kind of just a bit lazy, which is
it's a shame.
The more annoying of the things. I'm just like, just do better. It's right there.
Yeah.
But you guys, what's your kind of closing thoughts? Anything else that you wanted to throw out about how you feel about this situation before we talk about the stuff we do like about the game?
But I feel like we've said, the ethnicity percentage over in Belgium, I think, is probably more one-sided than, you know, like, perhaps people who are gender non-conforming, you know? So maybe they were able to, like, have people working at Larian who understood that, like, aspect of things, and maybe also weren't straight. So perhaps that is where this discrepancy lies. But also, consultants are a thing, you know? So, like,
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. That's why it feels lazy to me. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's not like they didn't have access. They could have done. Definitely. And, like, it's, you know, it's worth saying that, like, Ghent is a big student town. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people who worked at that studio were, like, recent students who maybe were having conversations about things like homophobia and gender. And do you know what I mean? But maybe not the most diverse kind of crew of people. Because the other thing that I will say, like, having made games, it's like, even for, like, the actors or the directors, it's so disparate that I can almost guarantee you that none of this would have felt problematic when recording those mm-hmm. lines and doing those things. Yeah. I couldn't tell you half of the stuff that I've said in multiple video games because you get given absolutely zero context right. for what you're mm-hmm. saying, like absolutely none, right? Yeah. Like unless I'm saying like something overtly like, you know, oh, I fully believe that all tieflings are evil and mm-hmm. deserve to be killed. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like unless I'm saying something like that, there's zero way that I even know mm-hmm. the context by which this scene is happening. Mm-hmm. And that's the same for the like voice directors. It's mm-hmm. probably the same for some of the cinematic directors. It's that's why I kind of made the point of it needs to be a directive from the absolute top mm-hmm. because they're the only ones with even the faintest overview of this game. Mm-hmm. Like you just don't get that if you're an actor or a director or, yeah. you know, none of them would have had any clue. You know what I mean? I'd probably be pretty horrified if some of the lines that I'd said were in these scenes, but there's truly nothing I would have known or could have done about it.
Yeah. Unati's in this game. I haven't found them yet.
Unati's in this game, but they're in it. Yeah, I haven't found them either. They are, yeah. But yeah, Jeremy, what you got?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think looking at the fact that where they're from, not just Belgium, I think this is, I've experienced this around Europe, even among more progressive-leaning people.
Mainland Europe.
It's just, it's just ignorance. I don't really give much slack in terms of, well, the conversation was... My man, like my brother in Christ. When was the civil rights movement in the United States? It's been how long? You all have heard of Martin Luther King Jr., right? Like you've heard of this? Like some of these 12 years a slave? Times. Maybe that was that released in this country? Like have y'all like it's I see it as a reason. I don't see it as an excuse. I see it as like, mm-hmm. yeah, no, like, no, no, I don't know yeah, what I was sure. I wasn't expecting much different, but at the same time I'm like, y'all could have easily done better. And hopefully they learn from that particular aspect and move forward. I will say, and actually there's a couple of, I think, interesting examples of this even further to make my central point, which is you can include certain things that are very distasteful or very painful as long as you actually engage with them in an like you said, Jasper, you need to engage them with them from a point of view. I know that you've mentioned that your favorite game of all time is Fallout New Vegas, and that's a game that has different that is a Western, first of all, it's a Western game in the Western genre, leans pretty hard into it. It basically, for the most part, seems to eliminate the issue of race almost entirely. There's people of all different races who are part of every faction. And it basically never gets brought up. The elements of racism that get brought up are with the super mutants and ghouls. And even that is a lot more like you see ghouls living amongst other people. And with a few exceptions, most people don't really seem to care. But they're,
and even if people do care, it's like normally those people you're like, the game is kind of like, mm-hmm. oh, look, these people have a problem with ghouls. Kind of weird, right?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like, so it makes a point. And like you said, it engages with it. Yeah. That's the important.
And it has elements of very prominent elements of slavery and even sexism in some of the factions. But again, that is very blatant and they confront you with it and say, this is what these people are doing. Dude, if you're going to align with them, this is what you're aligning with. Hmm.
This is a tiny tangent, but I never forget playing Fallout 3. I can't. You might remember because you might have played it more recently than I have, but there's a place called like the Crystal Falls or something. It's basically like a slaver camp. It's like the biggest slaver camp in Fallout 3. I had the wildest experience, one of the first times I played through Fallout 3, where I got to this slaver camp. Dude, I was like, cool, there they are. I'm going to get these fuckers. I had everything. I was locked and loaded. I had grenades. I had all the ammunition. I was ready to go. And I walked up and they were like, hey, friend. And I was like, what the f-? Like, and then I went, paused the menu, scrolled across to my karma, and basically without thinking, I'd just stolen loads and loads and loads of stuff.
Oh, no.
So I was like, my karma was like the devil. So all these slavers were like, hey, friend. And I was like, no. Because all the wikis and stuff that I'd found, it said like, when you approach, they'll almost certainly attack you on sight. And I was like, I walked up and they were just like, hey, friendo, really, how really you funny. Doing? And I was like, no!
Time to get some good karma, baby.
Yeah, exactly. And then she, as I started killing them, my karma was just like, bing, 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 like nice. Going back up again.
Yeah.
I was
I'm about to repent for my sins.
yeah, fully. But it was just because I kept stealing things. Just hadn't clocked at all. I was like, oh, stealing things. My karma will get out a tiny bit.
There's a difference between stealing things and slavery.
What is slavery if not stealing
a
person?
Steal enough. If you steal enough, Liv.
Stealing a person's freedom.
I guess
freedom.
So.
But even that is a point of view that's like, oh, you're a terrible person. Therefore, these other terrible people are like, oh, hey, bud.
We're going to like you. Yeah.
And then
absolutely.
By comparison, even further on the Disco Elysium point, when there are racist things, they are very frequently rendered in a humorous way where it's like a weird exaggeration. Mm. So like there's a point where you can go through the trash and you can find a mug that has a racist depiction on it. It's like a racist mug. And I think it even says like, this is a racist mug, but it says like, this is a culturally insensitive depiction of a such and such person. And then you can have a number of dialogue options. And one of them's like, oh, this is trash. And you throw it back in. One of them is like, oh, this racist mug might be evidence. And then one of them is like, what a perfectly reasonable representation of a such and such and such and such person. And it's like, it's done in such a way that the game has already told you that this is not the case. So it comes across as being humorous. And a lot of those options end up coming across as being humorous rather than just like, oh yeah, I guess you're just a racist. It's like whenever that even it's possible to be a fascist in the game, and the way the game makes fun of fascism is like from the moment that it offers you that option, it's like, this is very misogynist. This is a hateful, misogynist, fearful point of view, and you can choose it, but we're telling you right now that this is
you're a bad person.
We disagree with this option. And yeah, there are some people, like you said, Jasper, you can't please everyone. There are some people who are like, well, having that option at all is bad and offensive.
It's inherently bad.
And I would say, I think that's a perfectly valid way to engage in the sense that I don't want to engage with media that does this. So if you're like, oh, I don't want to engage with media that depicts slavery, I don't want to engage with media that depicts misogyny, okay, I think that's fine. Don't do that. But I don't think that it is inherently wrong to show those things, as long as you do it from not just any point of view, but you need to have a point of view and do something.
You need to have a stance.
Take a stance. Yep. We may disagree with the stance, but and it feels like Larian just sort of not really thinking, reproduced, like we've said, all that stuff that was already in the game. And then by the time it may have occurred to them, like, oh, wait a minute. Like the closest thing that I've had to where I was like, oh, that's nice, was there's an encounter you can have with a deep known character. And one of the dialogue options is, oh, hey, you're pretty far from home, aren't you? You should be in the Underdark. And if you say that, the gnome's like, dude, you know, we live like in other places, right?
Yeah.
We don't have to live in the Underdark. And it's kind of like, oh.
Okay, fair enough.
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
You're right.
More of that, I think, would be nice, where like characters would be like, hey, I don't appreciate that. And then maybe your character can meaningfully change to be like, oh, hey, yeah. And you start to get dialogue options that are like, yeah, don't be mean to my Githyanki friend. Like, I get that you have issues with their culture, but you don't know this person. Like, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I completely agree. So I think, it's a complicated subject, and it's in the sense that it's always just so hard talking about these things, especially when you just have like zero understanding of like what went into the creation of this game. And like, you know, like, but I think we can just all agree, given how sensitively they've handled certain aspects of the game, that's where I think it feels like particularly irritating that then others feel so tone deaf.
Yeah.
It's the criticism that I've seen in the LGBTQ community of people of color saying like, yo, all you white queer people, it's like you don't care about us. It's this thing that I've observed a lot in those conversations, that like there's a clear division, not only in feminism between feminists of color and white feminism, but also within the queer community of queer people of color and white queer people, where there's like that racism thing.
The divide.
Yeah, where it's like, oh yeah, we made a game that's really welcoming and LGBTQ friendly. And then people of color are like, yeah, but you also put a lot of racism into it. And they're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
how about that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, maybe that's it. Maybe you can only do one. Maybe you can only make. You can only nail one side of this. Maybe that's what it is. Oh wait, no.
What am I doing here?
Good examples of people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Liv is a walking example
Liv
that you
deeply
can do
both. Homophobic. We've cut it all out.
What?
Liv is deeply homophobic.
Oh no.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So if we shift gears a little bit, I think talk about some of the things that we've enjoyed playing through the game. I think that the, like you said, Jeremy, I think the my initial takeaway, the first thing that I think I might even have even said this to you when I after I played it, which was just like, I couldn't quite believe how close to the experience of playing 5th edition, you know, definitely like the earlier times that I played 5th edition, because I don't think I ever play like a quote unquote normal game now, you know what I mean? It, you know, set in any kind of location like this, but I definitely felt like it felt so close, right? Like to the, you know, just how like silly the game will allow you to go with certain situations, like truly just like so off the rails. And like the idea that they have dialogue trees for every single animal.
I know, wild to me.
Like absolutely wild.
Sometimes I'm literally like, I'm gonna treat myself and drink an animal, like an animal communication a potion before I go to bed
and talk to my
little spoilers, owlbear friend. Oh, it's good. And my little doggo friend. Oh, great stuff.
Yeah. I specifically gave Will the invocation that would let him cast beast speech at will, so I could talk to all the animals.
Yeah. I picked a druid mostly because I wanted to turn into animals and have speak with animals at will.
Like, that was my next playthrough. I'm going to do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That was a big fan of that. Mm-hmm. So I guess, just like, what are, one thing I am interested to ask you guys, how do you feel the game mechanics of the combat? You know, I think you said it earlier, Jeremy, like the mini game of combat, right? How do you feel like that translates? Because I will say this real quickly, which is just that, weirdly, some of the things that people have not enjoyed, I really enjoyed, which is that I loved the fact that I kind of dived straight into this very complicated game and knew exactly what I was doing. That was really enjoyable for me as an experience. So I'm wondering just how you felt like that in terms of, because normally I get into combat with a new game and I'm like, and I feel like a granddad, I'm like, the X button does what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I'll go watch a Twitch stream and there's this kid like doing the 14 button mega combo and I'm like, oh right, I'll never be able to do So I enjoyed jumping into a game and be like, oh, I know what I'm doing. This is good.
Yeah. As somebody who doesn't play a lot of video games, but does play a lot of D&D, I found that really fascinating. I think they did a pretty solid job. It felt like, it feels like the just a very ruthless way of being like, this is the setup. This is the scenario. A lot of the combats are very modular and engaging. Like, you can go through the same combat multiple times, and sometimes NPCs will be in different spots, and it's very, there's a lot of creative ways that you can approach it, dipping weapons and stuff, blowing certain things up, setting traps, getting care, like positioning, maneuvering, focusing attacks. There's a lot of really, really cool options. I guess my criticism of it is that I play a lot of D&D and I'm like, oh, okay, I basically know what most of these things already do, except they've changed a few of them a little bit. But I don't think the game does a very good job of like introducing new players. Because if you've never played any D&D before, you're just in combat and there's very little, like the tutorial, at least in my experience, did not give much of a, hey, this is what this menu does. This is what this attack does. This is what this does. This is what that does. This, if you're going to play this particular class or subclass, this is what it's good at. Like, there's very little
breakdown of the different classes might have been good.
Yeah.
And also, I think there's like hotkeys, for instance.
So
like,
many.
Oh, this is how you turn on the like what enemies can see view, right? Mm. Which like if you're a rogue, will like appear for like 2 seconds as you click the hide button, and you realize you're stood right in the view of someone, and you're like, oh right, okay, well I wouldn't have done that if I'd have realized. So it's like little things like that. I definitely think it could have been clearer, because there's a lot of times where I'm like, how is this working? This is slightly. And also, I don't know if you have either of you played a paladin yet.
No.
Yeah,
because I was thinking about how the smites work, because obviously in D&D you can add the smite on after you've seen the roll. Obviously you don't really see the rolls, so do you have to add smite before you hit?
I believe so. I'm quite high level now, and Shadowheart has gotten like a clerical smite or whatever. You can a pop-up basically comes up like, hey, would you like to add on your smite?
It gives you the option after the roll.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That's cool. It also does that.
I just wanted to double check.
It also does that with what is deflect missile if you're a monk. If somebody targets you, it will pop-up will come up and say, Dennis is about to take damage. Do you want to catch it? And then you have the option, if you reduce the damage to zero, it comes again and says, hey, would you like to spend a key point to throw this back?
Yeah. Yeah, there's counter spell as well. You can choose, like, it shows you what level the spell is, which is quite fun. And then it's like, would you like to use your fourth or fifth level counter spell for this? And I'm like, yes, I would.
Yeah, because I do think some of the changes that they made as well kind of have like made sense, and like it definitely feels like they've given more like one of the things actually Jeremy we called out a lot when we did our class deep dives was like, you know, how like the DM has to work a little bit harder to make the martial classes feel as kind of like tangibly kind of awesome as some of the spell classes. And I do feel like it does a pretty good job with making some of those melee classes feel like they have more stuff. Like the dip, I think, like the dip option is a really, really simple one. And just the way that you can use the environment, like, you know, oh, there's like something dangling above their heads. I can absolutely shoot that and knock it down and you know, whatever it is, and do damage. Or there's some grease on the floor, I'm gonna try and set that on fire. Things like that, I think, does make a quite a big sort of difference. And like, even just the other day, like literally I was like, oh, I can cast grease and then set that on fire.
It's great.
And I was like, this does loads of damage.
Or special limited melee attack options that are like, oh, you can do this and it'll cause somebody to bleed, it'll cause a gaping wound.
It'll reduce their movement speed so they can't get to someone else, you know, stuff like that. Really,
I think,
cool.
It like depicts like feats very, very well as well. Like they've had to like change a few things up, but like Sentinel is a great feat to have. It's really useful. Mobile. It's also oatmeal? Really oatmeal indeed. it's good. Basically,
well, we know how to pronounce that word now.
Also, because I played it in early access, I was quite worried that they weren't. I thought that they hadn't really, they didn't know much about the combat system, because like they had, like, for example, Shadowheart and Lazelle could like bonus action hide, and I was like, oh, okay, oh. I'll do this, but I don't think it's correct. But then you get to like, you get to now, and then they've just like rejigged all of that, and like it's like, oh no, you can't do that unless you're a rogue. And I'm like, oh, okay, they know what they're talking about. Cool.
Yeah. That's definitely good.
The combat is fun.
Some classes, some classes and subclasses got major boosts. I've heard from people that the Way of the Four Elements monk is so much better in this. I've heard it's actually very good.
Okay, that's good, because like, yeah, we've said so often how much the original version, the version we have in TTRPG sucks.
Yeah,
so that's good.
I love the environmental in, like you were talking about, Jasper, the environmental interaction aspects. There's, for example, I was in a fight with a bunch of giant spiders, and there was a scene. There were sections of webs that they were crawling on, and I had already known that you could sort of use fire to burn webs, and I was hoping that if I used burning hands while one of the big spiders was on a section of webs and hit the spider, I could damage the spider and the web, and the spider would fall through, and it did out. And it did massive damage, and I felt really good.
It lets you figure things out. It's really cool.
So satisfying. Yeah.
You know,
have you seen the owlbear slam thing as well? So apparently this is the move that will get you the most damage.
Oh, I have seen this. Yep. No, I have seen this.
Yeah. And it is amazing. So basically you need to get your druid up to like a high point, get them to wild shape into an owlbear, because obviously since the D&D movie, you can do that now. They've suggested using the box stacking trick as a way of getting the owlbear up high. Then basically what you do is you cast enlarge on the owlbear, and then the owlbear has like a leaping slam attack and you can basically jump off like an obscenely high platform and like smash things, and it basically uses the actual weight of the owlbear in an enlarged form to calculate the damage. And it's obscene.
Yeah.
It's like hundreds and hundreds of damage.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I'm literally just watching one of them now, and it's called Owlbear from the Top Rope.
Oh, yes. From the Top Rope. That's it. That's what it's called. I forgot. Yeah. It's so good. That's like the coined name for the move. But they were like, but Larian was like, yeah, I think we're like, this is definitely up there, but there might be one or two others that are like this, and like people just haven't found it yet. Mm. I love that. Like that, I'm like, I could happily spend hours just trying to figure out what what that move is.
There are also a few bugs that I've noticed that have been interesting. I'm playing as a halfling. I don't think they really spec'd much in to be able to, like, I don't know that they put into the halfling can look down. So when, as a halfling, I've been trying to interact with a squirrel, I'm still looking, I can look up and I can look straight ahead, but my eye line is completely off. Whereas if I'm playing a taller character, they'll look down at the squirrel. My halfling will just stare off into space.
It couldn't possibly be anything smaller than a halfling.
Yeah.
Surely not.
Exactly.
No. That's literally what happened. That's so
another
funny.
One, and this one's less funny. This one I'm like, oh, come on. I made my fighter NPC, because I won't spoil things, but I made my fighter NPC a battle master. And I was like, oh, commanding strike. It totally fits with their personality. They'd be ordering people around. Plus, it's a cool thing. And if they're out of position, they can order one of the other melee characters to attack. And it just flat out, either I'm doing it wrong or it doesn't work. Because every time I have tried it, it'll be like, yeah, you did it. And then I won't be able to make the attack with the other character. It won't let me use the reaction. And I've had, when I was streaming it, my friend looked it up, and apparently a bunch of people have had the same problem, that nobody really knows how to make that particular move work. And that's a shame.
Hopefully they'll update that.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
I've had a bug where, so I'll do like a whole battle, and like you'll have like, you know, random NPC allies, not like your party, but like other allies who help you fight. And then I do nothing at the end of the fight, and then a split second later, they turn against me and start attacking me for no reason. And I'm like, I thought we were friends. What is happening? And then like I went back and like redid the fight. I had to redo it, and then they were like, oh hey bud, what's up? Like it was just a glitch where they just kind of like were like,
what?
Oh, you like, wronged me. You know?
Is it like you accidentally like catch one of them for like 1 point of damage or something? Do you know what I mean? Like on the edge of a spell, and they
maybe,
just
maybe, But like, it literally, you know, when it's like combat has ended and everything goes back to out of combat mode, it would be like a split second and then, oh, you're in combat again. Like, what? Why? Why?
it was wild.
Spicy. Yeah.
That's spicy.
I have not gotten to the end game yet. I'm still in Act 1, but I have heard from my friend who's finished the game that it's already challenging, even as like a D&D veteran. Mm. Apparently, it becomes stupefyingly hard in late game. Like, really? This is, yeah. I will read you what he said. I don't know that this is an actual spoiler. I don't know that it actually is, but it's like, oh, you have 4 level 12 characters, which is the level cap in the game, level 12. Mm. Well, let's throw 6 spellcasters at you that have bone chill, which is what chill touches in the game, and blindness, and slow, so you're debuffed like crazy. Then throw 10 fighters who can action surge, and they're also fighting alongside a boss and a mini boss for the sake of balance. And I'm like, man, that sounds like one of my combats.
That sounds very much like that's a Jeremy Cobb combat right there. That sounds like the end of Outlaws and Obelisks. To be honest,
yeah, that's like, this is a little out of pocket.
How dare they? That's copyright. I think. Mm. I think it's copyright.
But,
yeah, it's copyright. That's copyright for sure.
It's plagiarism. Copyrighted, whatever.
Funny.
Yeah, like I did have a similar thing, but I think it's interesting as well because like I'm on tactician level because I'm a tryhard.
Because you're a beast,
I'm a beast.
Yeah, you're a beast.
But like it makes you reconsider something because I was in a situation where there were a bunch of spellcasters who were also like good at melee and stuff like that, and I was like, okay, they are just immediately like blinding me and like, you know, subduing me and stuff. So I had to go back to my camp, and unfortunately, get Gale to come and help me and give him counterspell so that he could help me out. And then like, yeah. And I was like, okay, we're doing well. Looks like you need it's helpful to have a wizard in your high level party, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever.
So sorry. I can't quite get over the stank that Liv just put on Gale.
That was Gale. Gale. Am I right? Oh,
Gale.
I'll talk about Gale more in my little Patreon exclusive.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. There you go. Find out why that stank is there.
Yeah.
Gale.
This is one last thing that I wanted to bring up, which is that I do think that the game runs into a problem that I think can be lessened in actually playing D&D. Which is that sometimes the role play aspects of D&D and the combat aspects, which can be folded in the role play, obviously, but the combat aspects feel like they are separate games. Like the combat can be incredibly deep and tactical, and that's what most of the major abilities revolve around. Whereas everything else is like very tied to like insight, primarily insight and charisma, or rather wisdom and charisma, like strength, all that stuff doesn't really matter as much outside of combat. And sometimes
outside of the combat.
Yeah. And it sometimes, because of the way the game functions, it doesn't really function in like the story is just going to keep moving forward if you fail this. Like, for example, say you fight, this is the point where I was like, oh yeah, this is a shame, because I feel like if I was in a D&D game, this could have been different. I'm trying to, without spoilers, there's a scene where you can try to infiltrate a sanctum being run by some nasty characters, and you can attempt to talk your way into that sanctum, because this sanctum is very large and has a lot of potential enemies, and it's early game. So it's like, you're like level 2, level 3, maybe level 4, try to charge in there. It's like, I don't know how this is going to go. So if you're like, oh, I want to talk my way past them. Every time I've tried to talk my way past them, I have succeeded on the checks, but then they respond by being like, okay, do something humiliating then in order to get in. And I'm like, well, it feels out of character for the people that I'm having do this to do something humiliating. And I don't want to do that. And so, but if I don't do that, then they immediately attack and there's no recourse. Yep. There's no further check to be like, intimidate them or something like that. Or if the combat starts, I can't, for example, take a hostage or do some kind of bluff that would cow them or negotiate. Yeah. There's nothing I can do. It's just, I get dragged into a combat with like 7 enemies. And that just wears me down before I even, and it's like, it sucks that I'm being forced into just this position, even after having succeeded. Sometimes if I crit on the check to get in, it's still like, you still got to do it. It's like,
I think what's interesting about this, right, is this feels like almost like it has created a problem for itself with how good it is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel like we have the similar feelings about like Fallout or like, you know, any number of other like RPGs that we might play, because it doesn't give us the kind of illusion of that much freedom. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't ever kind of really think that there was. And I think that even a game based on D&D, I don't think I expected the level of freedom that the game actually eventually gave me. Mm-hmm. So then I think it is harder to deal with and cope with when you do then come up against a wall and you're like, no, why is this here? Mm-hmm. Like, I should be able to just like do some, you know, do a fifth or a sixth or a seventh option, but I think you know, it's already, there's already stupefying amount of hours of like, you know, dialogue and whatever else in the game. I don't even know how they would have got around that, you know, as a concept.
And the way that that's mitigated in D&D is the DM can step in and be DM like, I recognize what you're doing. Let's say that, okay, say the same characters, the same scenario happens where they're like, we really want you to do this. Again, even if a combat starts, there's other options. And that's one of the things where it's like, unfortunately, this is kind of an issue with the way that the game functions that can be smoothed over. They can be merged more into each other by a skilled dungeon master. But unfortunately, the game just, like you said, they can't cover everything. And so you do come up against a point where either you have to make a roleplay decision that you don't think this character would normally make, or you suffer consequences that could prevent you from progressing through the game.
As we're coming to what I assume is the end of the episode, I'm not sure, maybe. I just wanted to okay, cool. Oh, amazing.
Oh, I'm happy.
Yeah, Liv wants to get out of here.
To make sure I got this question in before we got to the
You
end.
Have stuck two middle fingers up to me.
No,
and
I didn't.
In the chat, just
liar.
Put, I need to leave.
No, you're a liar, Jaffa.
Liv, you didn't need to call us that name.
There's like 14 E's. Yeah, I expressly didn't read out that.
I've got nowhere to go except to go and play more.
It's super homophobic.
It's a slur.
It's homophobic.
I was gonna say it's not. I was gonna say it's not a slur. It's just really mean.
It's just really mean.
Liv was like one black halfling and two black numpties, and I was like, oh,
that's just
so
mean,
like,
Liv.
That's so wholesome. Like, what a wholesome way
wholesomely
to like
mean.
Dunk on someone.
She won't stop calling us plums.
Oh, you're my little plums. You're my little plums.
It's a bunch of plums. God. I knew a dude from Grimsby, and it never cracked me up more than when he'd be like, he's a fucking plum.
Yeah. It's a good insult.
Yeah.
It's a good insult. Honestly,
calling someone a plum is extremely funny.
It's very
like, objectively. Yeah. Like, you can't say that seriously.
Especially
just,
with that accent, too. A plum.
Yeah.
It's great.
A plum.
You're a plum.
British accents are great. Honestly,
I'd say he was doing it with aplomb, to be honest. Yes, Liv, sorry, please.
that was good wordplay. I was just going to ask what, you know, each of us,
who are we hitting
and stuff. Yes. I was going to ask this, what character classes we're playing and like what our characters are, who we're romancing and who's in our party.
Yeah, start us off, Liv.
Sure. Yeah, go for it.
Let's do one by one. I'll say that I'm playing my blue water ganassi that I always play. Or once again, there are no water ganassis in the game, which is a shame, so I just made a blue half elf. But like, you know, I say that I say that she's got elven blood anyway in my game when I play her. But anyway, and she's like a multi-classed, currently she's like 6 levels in bard and 4 levels in rogue. And
dope. What subclasses?
Subclasses. She is a lore bard because she would be glamour, but they don't have glamour. Mm. And she's an assassin rogue because they don't have swashbuckler. So that's what I've gone with. It's a shame. Yeah. But I will say as well, playing a bard in this game, so many amazing options as a bard. Like, it's next level gameplay for me. Like, I love charisma characters anyway, but like, it's like, it really gives you times to shine because you have a charisma character. Nice. Yeah.
What are the bard subclasses that you can play in the game?
I believe you've got like sword singer. Is it sword singer?
Oh, swords.
Yeah, swords. Yeah. Swords. I think valor as
valor
well.
Valor is in there. Yeah, valor and also
double check.
I'll make Van.
Yeah. I'll look this up.
Yeah.
And who are you romancing?
Why don't we go along and Jeremy?
Oh, I see. We'll do that one afterwards. Right, okay.
I'll jump in with mine. I'm playing Dennis Colespring, the namesake of the podcast. He is the original black halfling that I could not find art to represent way back in the day, way back in 2019. He's a monk. I've actually managed, I'm sort of recreating a lot of his storyline. So he started as a Way of the Open Hand monk. He did get a hold of not Slippers of Spider Climb, but they're Slippers of Spider Web. It's the closest I've been able to get. He can't walk up walls, but he can walk on spider webs. So, you know,
that's good.
And he may later transition into Way of Shadows monk. That's what I'm doing.
Get that teardrop tattoo, baby.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this game is not, even though it does have a few very solid black hairstyle options, does not have a good afro. So I've gone with the really...
It's very loose.
Yeah. It's very loose. Doesn't look like a black afro. It looks like...
It's a real mixed race. It's a real mixed race afro.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, even my afro is...
Yeah, I was going to say.
It is. Yeah.
It's very mixed race. It's been mixed several
generations. It's like my kind of fro, you know?
Yeah, like, much like looser curls. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I went with like a dreadlock look. And I'm planning to romance everyone. I plan to run through this party. That is
wow.
Dennis is fully planning to run through the whole party. They're gonna fall like dominoes, baby.
My God.
Yeah. That is.
And who do you normally take around with you? Like what companions?
Yes. So right now my main companions are Will, because he's awesome, and also he's black.
I'll be honest. Awesome, cool same, black same. Dude. Strong same. Soon as he turned up, I was like, "Cool, this way, my guy. This way, in the back."
Sorry, Gale.
honestly, I genuinely feel like there should have really been an option to dap him up. I was kind of disappointed that I wasn't. Like, as soon as I saw him, I was like, "Let me just handshake this dude. Yeah. Like, let me get like, I just need to dap."
He's great. I have Will. I have Lazel. And I have Shadowheart, because I wanted some spell casting. I wanted some sturdiness. I wanted some melee that Dennis could fight alongside. And I have Will. I spec'd him into Pact of the Blade, which is the closest that this game comes to a Hexblade. And so he's kind of a mixed caster blaster. It's a lot of fun. I'm having a great time so far.
Nice.
Jasper.
Yeah, I'm playing Jamal. He is a halfling warlock. In my head, he is he's basically like a warlock. His patron is himself. Mm-hmm. Because cool. We all know that Jamal is actually a being of immense power.
Yes.
But he's sort of like, he's just like kicking it with the humies for a while with the like normal folk. So he's just decided to give himself like a human avatar form for the sake of this adventure. What am I? The old one?
Great old one, yeah.
I want to say the great old one.
That makes
sense. That's my, it's fun.
That's Jamal.
Yeah. That was the closest thing I could think to Jamal as a patron. I'm also enjoying it for the same reasons. There's a lot of real fun charisma-based options. There's a lot of fun like warlock options as well. Just like when you see something that just looks a little nasty, you know what I mean? You're just like, yeah, dog. it's quite enjoyable. Like you'll see some sort of like real messed up like ancient runes that have got like clearly got some like ancient stank on them. Yeah. And like your warlock's just like, yeah, I know what this is. Like I've seen this before.
I'll leave this to me.
Exactly. Cracks knuckles. Just let me have a look at this. So that's quite fun.
By the way, one of my favorite bard options was that there's like a bunch of people who are trying to like get something open and they're like, come on, help. And you can just literally do performance and be like, go on, you can do it. Come on, put your fucking back into it. And that for some reason helps. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? And then you get that's to go so over good. And kick the door down. And it's like, great.
That is basically the Baldur's Gate 3 version of being in a TTRPG and being so hot that you help.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
That's effectively
exactly
what it is.
The vibe I wanted from a character. Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And then my party currently is Will, Asterion, and Karlak.
Nice.
I'm going to be exclusively worshipping the ground that Karlak walks on, because that's exactly where I'm at.
Muscle mommy.
Yeah,
there's no There's mm-hmm. yep. There's just nothing else. There's nothing else that I need. It's great.
Liv, you started sweating again.
No, I'm not, no. It's fine. I'm fine. No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm fine. Don't
even
worry about it.
Don't worry. Like, sorry. I'm sorry. The genuine. There was a genuine look on Liv's face then of just like actually needing to recover. That was fantastic.
I've got perfectly normal feelings about Karlach. Okay, I've got perfectly normal feelings, and you will find out about them on the Patreon if you go. And-
is that you in the poster with Karlach? Did you edit yourself?
No. No, I don't. No, I didn't.
That's your 3BH headshot.
I didn't use the 3BH Photoshop for this reason. I didn't do that. I didn't do that. No. No. Anyway.
Can I just ask you guys, have you seen the clip? I've forgotten the guy's name, so please, apologies. There's one streamer when... when Karlach says, just find me something to sink my teeth into. He just stares down the camera and goes, me!
Stick your teeth into me!
Stick your teeth into me!
I haven't seen that, but that's hilarious.
It's very good.
Can I,
done very well.
Jeremy, I'm going to have to find this for you because it is so one of the good. Funny, like, it's such a genuine...
It's such a vibe.
It's so instant. It's so funny. It really is so funny.
And I didn't mention that I normally have Karlach, Astarion, and Shadowheart in my party because they are my weird little polycule. I wanted Will in there, but like the thing is that I feel like he's been. I don't know what it is. I feel like he's been toned down since early access. I really vibe with him in early access.
Oh.
But like I think they've made changes to Gale and to Will, but I'm like, I don't know. It's a shame.
My Will did so try to hit on Shadowheart, I think, a little bit. And she was like, not sure. Oh. Maybe later. And I was like, Okay.
Ooh,
my man's got some
game. Maybe it's because I'm in currently, you know, romancing Shadowheart. So that's probably, you know, maybe that's
it. Who's the Denzel Washington? My man.
My man.
But
I will go more in depth into my experience trying to like sustain a relationship between Karlach, Astarion, and Shadowheart.
Have you succeeded in betting all three?
Yes. Nice. Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, Jeremy, here you go. I found the clip, so we can make this the last thing that we do. We'll just get Jeremy's live react to this particular clip because it is just so enjoyable how unhinged my man is in this moment.
Right,
it's really, really funny. So go see in the chat now.
Fuck yes.
What a mood.
Now I just need something to sink my teeth into.
Me! Me! Sink them in me!
This is good content.
This is great content. Yeah. It's the fact that he takes his glasses off and just fully eyeballs the camera.
And the music comes in.
Yeah.
Backbreaker. The backbreaker ability pops up. He takes a drink.
Oh, good. He takes a drink. He obviously takes a drink. And that got retweeted by Larian and everything. That was very, very funny. Very funny.
Larian know what they're doing.
That is phenomenal.
They know what that.
It's pro Quesadilla, jack of all trades. That's the stream.
Yeah, I think. The stream. That's the one. Yeah. And I think, you know, closing thought, I will say this, Larian. It was genius making everyone horny in this game. Mm. I will once again reiterate publicly, if you want to see the world reacting to to that bear scene, please go and watch the original clip of that because I'm sat in the second row and you can truly see me losing my mind. I'm truly unable to process what I'm seeing in this moment. And we had no idea that we were on screen at that time as well. Like, because all we could see was just the bear. We had a camera like on us in the audience, but I didn't realize that they had us in a small box, basically. Mm-hmm. If you find the clip that's from the panel from Hell, you'll just see in the bottom left hand corner there's just a little box, and in the second row there's just me losing my absolute mind over what we're seeing. It is very, very funny. But that's, I think, probably about all for this week's episode. Liv, why don't you go ahead and tell everyone where they can find you, other than talking about all the horniness on Patreon.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/TBHalflings.
Yeah, you should go and check that out because I'm going to be unhinged. Yeah, you can check me out over on like Twitter and pretty much every other social media account I have is at Does Dark Magic. That's where I am. I'm also Liv Kennedy on Blue Sky, but I think I need to change it to add the Dark Magic because I'm torn between having my name on there, but also having the brand. I don't know. And the synergy, you know how it
yeah,
is.
Synergy.
But yeah. Synergy. Also, subscribe to us on YouTube if you want to, youtube.com/3blackhalflings. We're there. And also I talk about all sorts of other tabletop stuff, on youtube.com/dicebreaker, where we recently did a little live stream where we all played Edgelord characters in Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh, nice.
And it's very, very funny. But yeah, we're all just like super edgy and it's great. Yeah.
That's really cool. I really want them to bring in, I need them to someone to mod in a camera, a free camera, because I really, really want to run a like proper roleplay stream where we can kind of like have, you know, be kind of cutting dynamically in between like shots of our faces, like the characters' faces whilst we're like roleplaying, because I think it'd be extremely funny. Because basically at that point, I think you could effectively just make your own story, which would be like, you know, because you could kind of skip through enough of the rest of it to kind of just fit the dialogue as you want it, or even kind of semi-mute the dialogue that's there and have stand-in dialogue. I think that'd be kind of fun. So
yeah, for sure.
Someone get on that, mod that, please. Mod that. Jeremy, where can people find you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at JeremyCobb1. That's Cobb with two B's, the number one. I'm also there on Blue Sky, same name. I'm on Instagram at the Cobbmeister. And you can find me on the show, The Quantum Reactor, at Q Reactor Show on Twitter. We are wherever pods are cast. You can find me streaming, including Baldur's Gate 3, on Twitch, twitch.tv/casualquestlive. Come give us a follow. We're three away from our monthly, our month goal of followers. We're right on the cusp. On the cusp. We hit affiliate next. Partner is a much longer road, but we're at least trying to get to 150 followers, and we're at 147. We're right there.
Nice.
Yeah. So I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3, Fallout, New Vegas, and Deus Ex Human Revolution, and I might be starting a co-op stream, a separate Baldur's Gate 3 co-op stream, just with some peeps. So we'll see about that.
Fun.
Yeah. If you want to play with me, go to d3sc.com. Fall, the Fall Cruise. I'm going to be on it. Sign up to play with me. You can play in Utarum. I'm going to be running a Paradox Perfect one shot as well. Go sign up there.
Nice.
And then the last thing is go check out Project Mirana on Roll For It, the Twitch TV Twitch Roll For It channel. Twitch.tv/RollForIt, number 4.
Well done for remembering the name this week.
Thank you. I looked it up because I thought it was maybe Lake Mirana. No, it's Project Mirana. I was right before. It is. Yeah, I'm in it. We're playing Call of Cthulhu. It's going to be great. It's fun. Every Thursday, come check it out. And finally, this is my last thing, I'm in the Hero Forge series. It's the Hero Forge series, Into the Bellowing Wilds. The Hero Forge teamed up with the folks behind, I think it was the Into the Bellowing Wilds source book. It's really fun. I'm in it. Gabe's in it. Annika from Hero Forge is in it. It was a blast. If you are a fan of the Dingo Doodle YouTube channel, go check it out. You'll see me playing a very wholesome dad who just loves his lizard son. It's great.
Cute. Hey,
yeah.
Thank you. Quantum Rata, you know what
I said? That was the first one I said.
No, you did. Yeah.
Oh, you did the first one.
I hit them all. Fine. I hit them all, baby.
You hit them all. And you did it. You did it in just over 2 minutes this time, which was not bad. Which is not bad, actually. That was
better.
Improvement. I actually timed it. So I was interested to see how long it would take.
That is a 10% decrease. That was, or no, sorry. We cut it all the way down to 10% of what it was originally, where it was like 20 minutes.
I mean, literally, it was 20 minutes.
It was, apologies for what we put you through last time. We had a lot to say, apparently.
We really...
Not just Jeremy.
We should start sharing we should start putting this as a part of the ad section that you can get for free on Patreon. Just cutting all of our insanely long plugs. Because let me tell you, if you think Jeremy's is long now, you just wait till the end of September, baby, because I'm going to be here for a minute. But for now, all I'll say is follow me at JW_Cartwright on all of my social medias. And go check out Dark Dice, Games and Feelings, Performance Capture Podcast, and other stuff. make sure you check out the show. You can follow the show at 3, that's the number 3, Black Halflings. You can check out the Patreon, where we're going to be doing, where Liv is going to be teeing up some very horny focused Patreon content. We also have been, me and Jeremy just recorded another JCs of movies. Mm-hmm. There was a warlock. We finished up the warlock subclasses. Was it warlock or sorcerer?
It's warlock.
Warlock.
That's going to be warlock. It was delayed a little bit, but I've got everything together. It's going to be coming out probably the day of this recording, actually.
Hey, there we go. That'll be out by the time you're listening to this. And there's a bunch of other goodies on there as well, just generally more 3BH stuff. Plus also you get to like vote on things that we do as well. So you should definitely check out that. Then last but not least, make sure you check out, we have merchandise as well. You can purchase some really, really cool looking gear. And let me tell you, the jumpers are the best. I want to plug the jumpers because I love them. And I wear them, I literally wear my 3BH jumper like nearly every single day. I love it so much. It's great quality. It's not like too thick. So you can like, it's just perfect for like most weather. I really like it. So yeah, that's us for this week. I hope that you've enjoyed this conversation about Baldur's Gate 3. And we will catch you very soon. So long, Shire.
So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
I was really hoping you were going to continue and go, so long, Shire.
So long, Shire.
Yay. Very good.
Daniel, just put that one in. Just put this first one. Put that one in.
Put that in the opening. Put that in the opening.
Yes.
Wait, can you instead of the, Daniel, can you instead of the clips just have Jeremy go?
Yeah. I'll give you a lot. Here's a sample.
It's a movie episode.
Hey, Jeremy, you want to know something funny? We have the video.
Yes!
We have the video of that.
Yes!
And it will be going on social
media. You
should
put that up when it's like, who are you romancing?
Literally, it's you saying like, I'm going to plow
feet
through everyone.
Feet Jeremy Fogg. Oh my, that's the clip. That's the clip. It has to be. It has to be.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.